Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Dan Friedel. Later, Ana Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
The Democratic Party presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, has canceled a campaign trip to California because of sickness. A spokesman made the announcement Sunday. Earlier that day, Clinton left early from a ceremony in New York, marking the 15th anniversary of the September 11th terror attack. A video shows her stumble before guards help her into her vehicle. Clinton's doctor said she had become overheated and dehydrated at the event. He said she is recovering well. Her campaign said the doctor had examined her on Friday and reported she had pneumonia. The diagnosis was not made public until Sunday. She was treated with antibiotics, advised to cut back on her appearances, and to get rest. Clinton's now canceled trip to California was to include money-raising events and a speech about the economy. The Republican Party candidate, Donald Trump, told Fox News he hopes Clinton gets well soon. "I hope she gets well and gets back on the trail, and we'll be seeing her in the debate," Trump said. The two candidates are to hold their first direct debate on September 26th. Trump also said he plans to release the results of a physical examination he had last week. He said it would include, in his words, very, very specific numbers. Neither candidate has released extensive health records, although Clinton has provided more information than Trump. Trump has suggested that Clinton lacks the energy to serve as president. Some Trump supporters have suggested Clinton is in poor health as a result of a concussion she suffered in a fall in 2012. However, they have not provided any evidence to support the claim. Trump released a letter from a doctor last year. It stated that Trump would be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. But that doctor later said he wrote the letter in 5 minutes while a Trump campaign vehicle waited nearby. Hillary Clinton is 68 years old. Donald Trump is 70. I'm Katie Weaver.
If Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton wins the U.S. presidency, her husband Bill Clinton would fill the role traditionally held by women first ladies. How would this role be different for Bill Clinton, especially since he served as the 42nd president of the United States. "There are no precedents," said Alan Lichtman, professor of history at American University in Washington, D.C. "But certainly he should not be called the First Lady. He should be called the First Gentleman, of course." Bill Clinton has not publicly discussed his possible role as First Gentleman. He has said that if Hillary Clinton is elected, he will resign from the board of the not-for-profit Clinton Foundation. Hillary Clinton has repeatedly said that as president, she would surely include him in her administration. Hillary Clinton was clear about this question during a campaign stop earlier this year in the southern state of Kentucky.
"My husband, who I'm going to put in charge of revitalizing the economy, because, you know, he knows how to do it, and..."
More recently, she was asked about her husband's possible role during an interview on the CBS News show 60 Minutes. "I will be the president, but it does happen to be a historical fact that my husband served as president for 8 years," she said. "And there's a lot that happened which helped the American people during those 8 years. I want an economy that creates more jobs." Dr. Anthony J. Exterowitz is an honorary professor of political science at James Madison University. He says the First Lady's office has become much more professional over the years and is now also closely linked to the office of the president. He would expect this to continue if Bill Clinton took over as First Gentleman.
"I look for even greater professionalization of staff under his management, probably more staff, more hierarchical organization, and much, much higher integration with the White House office and his office."
Exterowitz said he has no doubt that Hillary Clinton would use Bill in a much greater political role than most first ladies.
"She'd be crazy not to, given his experience. He knows all the global leaders. He is conversant in foreign and domestic policy, and he's conversant on all policy issues. So he's an enormous resource, and she has to use him, and she will use him."
In the United States, a first lady traditionally does not draw a lot of attention while supporting her husband. Most take up non-political causes to publicize across America. One example is Michelle Obama, wife of President Barack Obama. She has led a campaign to reduce child obesity and promote healthy eating. Most Americans can support such a non-political policy. Hillary Clinton was one of the most politically active first ladies in history. She pushed for one of her husband's main political goals, to bring health insurance to all Americans. But she faced strong opposition, and the administration's health reform effort failed in the end. Another first lady who had political influence was Eleanor Roosevelt, wife of the 32nd U.S. President, Franklin D. Roosevelt. She told the nation in 1933 that Americans should not expect their new first lady to be a symbol of elegance. Instead, she said they would be getting a plain, ordinary Mrs. Roosevelt. During her service, Eleanor Roosevelt became the first first lady to hold her own press conferences. She also traveled the country visiting relief projects and examining work and living conditions. She campaigned for the rights of the poor and minorities, but she also found time for her official White House entertaining duties. Exterowitz said he thinks the next most influential first lady in terms of policy was Rosalynn Carter, wife of the 39th U.S. President, Jimmy Carter.
"This is woman who sat in on cabinet meetings, Camp David negotiations, served as a presidential ambassador during a Latin American trip, lobbied and testified before Congress.
He noted that Carter expanded her role by creating a new position of chief of staff and integrating her office with the White House office. Some first ladies have also had influence in a less public way. One was Nancy Reagan, wife of the 40th U.S. president, Ronald Reagan. Nancy had a powerful impact from behind the scenes, according to Exterowitz.
I would say a very, very strong, influential, behind-the-scenes partner, particularly with respect to foreign affairs and establishing relationships with the Russians.
Nancy Reagan was also known to give her husband advice on his public image and which people to choose for top staff positions. Bill Clinton's role could also raise the issue of whether presidential spouses should be paid. Currently, they receive no salary. Exterowitz said the case in favor of pay would be stronger if Bill Clinton was given specific tasks from the president. He also noted that Hillary and Bill Clinton both have strong activist personalities. He said there is a very real possibility that Bill Clinton could overshadow his wife in certain actions. Professor Lichtman agrees. Whether he can keep himself under control is the bigger and much more interesting question. If Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump wins, he has said he thinks his wife Melania would be an unbelievable first lady. Melania Trump is a former model who was born in the East European Republic of Slovenia. She would not be the only first lady born outside of the United States. It happened once before in 1825. That was the year the sixth U.S. president, John Quincy Adams, took office. A U.S. diplomat, John Quincy Adams met his future wife, Louisa, in London when she was 19 years old, according to the White House website. The two married 3 years later, but she did not arrive in the United States until 1801. Melania Trump has not specifically talked about her possible role as First Lady, but she said in an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper that she often gives her husband her opinions on issues. Exterowitz said it is hard to say how involved Melania would be in a Trump administration because the pair has no history as a political couple.
When I look at Melania Trump, I see a very, very steep learning curve. There's virtually no experience in terms of Washington, politics, policy. It's just not there. So she's going to have to learn virtually everything.
I'm Brian Lynn.
The United States and its allies are reacting to North Korea's latest nuclear test. The test, carried out on September 9th, was the country's second nuclear test this year. Some reports say the North Korean government may already be planning more testing. Last Friday, North Korea said it exploded a nuclear device underground. It was the country's fifth nuclear test since 2006. Measurements showed the explosion was stronger than North Korea's four earlier nuclear tests. A South Korean Defense Ministry official said, "With regards to the possibility of North Korea's additional nuclear test, South Korea and U.S. intelligence assess that it is always ready to conduct an additional nuclear test." South Korea's President Park Geun-hye held an emergency meeting with political leaders on Monday. She met with representatives of her Saenuri party and the two main opposition parties, the Minju Party and the People's Party. Park urged unity in reaction to North Korea's actions. South Korea is working with the U.S., Japan, and other countries to press for increased sanctions on North Korea in the United Nations Security Council. The Council has already approved a number of measures aimed at punishing the North for its nuclear activities. New proposals could expand the list of products barred for export to the country. They could also expand restrictions on North Korean individuals and organizations tied to the North's military or weapons programs. Sung Kim is the U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Policy. He said the U.S. government is working with America's allies to form a response. He said they are considering unilateral, bilateral, and trilateral measures against North Korea. Kim met with Japanese officials on Sunday. The U.S. government also has called on China to do more to pressure North Korea to give up its nuclear and its missile programs. Existing sanctions by the UN Security Council, the U.S., and South Korea have hurt North Korea economically. Those measures target trade, shipping, and finance. China's cooperation on sanctions is considered important because most North Korean trade flows to or through China. Chinese officials have called on North Korea not to take steps they consider provocative. However, China's reaction has been limited. Daniel Pinkston is a Northeast Asia expert with Troy University in Seoul. He says China is unwilling to impose measures that could cause the collapse of the North Korean government.
So I think they will keep the lifeline in place for North Korea.
On Monday, China's foreign ministry said sanctions alone cannot solve the nuclear issue. It also said unilateral action will not be productive. North Korea has intensified its nuclear and missile testing. In addition to its nuclear tests, the country has launched more than 20 medium or long-range missiles. Yet North Korea faces problems feeding its population. And the UN Agency for Humanitarian Affairs reported Monday that flooding in the northern part of the country has killed more than 130 people. More than 100,000 have fled their homes, the agency said. Late last week, President Barack Obama condemned the latest North Korean nuclear test. He called it a grave threat to regional security and to international peace and stability. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is what's trending today. A teenager from the northeast state of New Hampshire has one of the top trending YouTube videos this week. Lily Hevish is known as Hevish 5 on YouTube. She is an expert at making domino art. Dominoes are plastic rectangles used in a game that is popular around the world. But there is something else you can do with dominoes. You can place the dominoes upright and knock them down. Havish is a master at making complex and creative domino art projects. On Saturday, she released a video of her latest domino project. It is called The Amazing Triple Spiral. She made the design using 15,000 dominoes. It took her 25 hours and 8 days to complete the project, she said. Havish laid the dominoes on the floor in a wide spiral pattern. The blocks are all different colors. When she knocks down the first domino, it starts the chain reaction. It lasts for about 90 seconds. Havish's latest design quickly impressed YouTube viewers. It has been viewed almost 3.5 million times. One viewer wrote, "I couldn't imagine myself spending 25 hours to build that, even if I had the dominoes." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The latest generation of Americans to enter the labor force may be reshaping the way the United States goes to work. Millennials are the generation who reached adulthood around the year 2000. And many of them do not have the usual 9-to-5 work mentality. The millennial workforce wants to work a more flexible schedule. This could mean the end of the inflexible 40-hour work week. A professor at Florida International College of Law in Miami, Florida, explains that millennials value their free time. They value their personal lives, their friends, hobbies, and interests as much as they value work. That attitude may sound like a benefit to only the workers, but perhaps not. Professor Carrie Stone says, studies show that reducing working hours can actually result in better workplace productivity. Stone says that after working so many hours per week, you reach the point of what she calls diminishing returns. Diminishing returns is an economic term. It refers to a point at which the level of profits or benefits gained is less than the amount of money or energy invested. She adds that people need breaks during the day and during the work week. During a workday, they need FaceTime to talk to a friend or colleague. Without planning it, they build this time into their workday. During the week, people need time to relax, or downtime. As a group, Stone says, millennials strongly believe that people need a certain amount of downtime and a certain amount of vacation in order to be happy at home and at work. Employers are not often worried about work-life balance. They are concerned with the bottom line, the profits and results of the company. However, new studies show that a happy employee is good for the company's bottom line. An organization based in Seattle, Washington, seeks to challenge what it calls the epidemic of overworking in the United States and Canada. Take Back Your Time states that its goals are to change the work culture by reducing work hours, guaranteeing paid vacation, and guaranteeing at least 1 week of sick leave. The organization says that giving employees at least 1 week of sick leave will help to reduce damage to a person's health and relationships caused by working too much. Ted Belilis is a psychologist and managing director of a company that advises other companies on how to work smarter. He agrees that in the U.S., there is a work epidemic, or as he calls it, workaholism. He warns that stress is not uncommon in the workplace, along with physical and mental health issues. Belilis adds that stress often leads to heart disease and other sicknesses. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention agree. The CDC's National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health states this on its website. Stress is a prevalent and costly problem in today's workplace. Additionally, periods of disability due to job stress tend to be much longer than disability periods for other occupational injuries and illnesses. Belilis says that to fix the problem of an overstressed employee, companies can give employees greater choice regarding how they work. Many companies have already started doing just that. For the past year, a small company in San Diego, California, called Tower Paddleboards, has started a revolutionary substitute to the 40-hour-plus work week. They have started a 5-hour workday for their 11 employees. Stefan Arstol is the founder and CEO, Chief Executive Officer. He challenged the 8-hour workday, calling it something that was invented for factory workers 100 years ago. Arstol defends his employee program, saying that it helps to keep his employees healthy. He says that these days, people are not active enough. He adds that disease is on the rise. Prescription drug abuse and alcoholism are also on the rise. He says he believes that making a little more money for many more hours does not make people happy. The 5-hour workday, he suggests, gives people time to do other things in life, such as spending more time with family and friends. So how has this affected his company's bottom line? Arstol's company reports that it is more profitable than ever. But does a reduced workday result in more productivity? Dan Ariely is a professor at Duke University in the southern state of North Carolina. Ariely says there are basically three things people do at work. They do productive, thoughtful, deep, useful work, do mindless work that has to be done, and waste time. If you decrease the workday from 8 hours to 5 hours, he says, what will be lost is the meaningful work. There is a push by some workers to reduce their hours at the office. However, some of America's best-known companies are known for their highly driven, workaholic culture. Arstol says that companies are trying many different things to see what works. He adds that Tesla, Apple, and Amazon have teams of workers that are super high performers. These people are working around the clock, 24/7, with smartphones and computers, and they are accomplishing some amazing things. This was his own firsthand experience. He warns that a person can easily work themselves into this unhealthy lifestyle of overworking. For Arstol and some other corporate executives, the balance is to have happy, productive employees and a profitable bottom line. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.